This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Welcome to another week's edition, and we are still kind of clearing the deck of a lot of podcast conversations that we've had with different magicians over 2024 while we were at magic conventions, and they were some outstanding guests and conversations that we had, and every one of them have just been outstanding. And so it's hard to decide which order, so I've been trying to do it fairly chronologically. Today, we're going to be releasing one that we recorded with Mark Pocan, who is a congressman in the 2nd Congressional District near Madison, Wisconsin. And he and I got together when we were at the Trix Convention in North Carolina and Charlotte this last November, early November. So it's been a couple of months since we had first recorded this, but he was someone that I really wanted to sit down and chat with for a while. Magicians come in all forms, all with various interests and backgrounds and jobs, and it doesn't matter if you're whether you're working in the service industry or you are working in professional business like medicine or law or whatever else. There are so many people with a common interest of magic. And that's kind of one of the things that I really want to emphasize here this week, because Mark Pocan is someone who has had a long interest in magic, and it is something that really hasn't taken necessarily a back seat. In fact, as you will learn in this podcast, it was because of magic that kind of helped put him through college, as he was even early on wanting to pursue a career that would follow in his father's footsteps that would put him into politics. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I think I just did. But Mark is also someone who is working for the people in Wisconsin and ultimately for all of us to try to make this country a better place. So congratulations and thank you, Mark, for all that you're doing. One of the things that is one of his directives, I guess, that he wants to work on is the putting into place a law that would allow magic to be considered on a national level as an art. As performing art. We'll get into that towards the end of this podcast then too. A lot of stuff that's going to be covered here this week. And I know that if you had not heard the name Mark Pocan, even if you don't live in Wisconsin, even if you do live in Wisconsin, you may not know the name Mark Pocan necessarily, but it's one I think afterwards that you will remember after hearing this week's podcast. So I want to welcome my guest this week, and please enjoy our conversation this week with Congressman Mark Pocan here on The Magic Word.
We have all kinds of people who have interesting stories, backgrounds, jobs, and interests that are outside of magic. But when it comes to getting together, we all speak the same language, magic, as magicians. And I've got someone with me right now who has another voice outside of magic, who actually is a congressman in the Madison, Wisconsin district for the 2nd Congressional District. So he spends a lot of his time not so much in Wisconsin, but in Washington, D.C. He just was voted in for his 8th term, as I understand it.
7th term.
7th term. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
And is involved in magic in so many different ways and is an all-around great guy. And it's one of those people who I've been wanting to talk to for quite a while. And we have seen each other, but just haven't had the time to really sit down. And I'm so glad that we have here right now. We're at a magic convention where we've got just a breath that we can take.
Yes.
So please welcome my friend and also a friend of the Magic Word who is a patron, which hint, hint, by the way, in case the rest of you want to pledge or donate, please do. Please welcome Mr. Mark Pocan. Hey, Mark, how are you, sir?
Very good, Scott. Thank you.
Good.
In fact, I often listen to your program either on the way to or on the way back from D.C. because it's great to do on the plane. And so
kind of a good brainwash. I mean, what I say by that is just kind of purging or washing your brain of everything else and just kind of thinking about magic, I guess.
And reconnecting with, you know, my passion. It's kind of funny, like in high school, and I used to do magic, and I love two things, politics. My dad was on the local city council in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I loved magic, and I was doing that to help pay for college and things. And now here I am, 60 years old, and I'm doing politics and magic. So I think I've done all right. I'm doing the two things I love.
The things you love. Exactly right. It's interesting that you followed that path, because that was one of the things I was going to ask you about, is getting into politics, because I have mentioned this maybe once or twice, but not everybody listens to all the episodes or everything that I say, but I could have had a path actually going into politics myself. I had run for and won school board election many years ago before I even had children.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the political, not movement, what am I trying to say? The process, I guess, so much of, calling people and campaigning and debating and being on the radio, et cetera, et cetera. And I loved it. And I didn't have magic at the time as an outlet. And so that was a way I can kind of connect to the public. Mm-hmm. And my path took a different direction. But had I continued, I thought, well, I might want to run for mayor and then maybe for Congress or, something. This was in Illinois.
Yeah.
And so I was very interested in politics time. And again, my path went a different direction. I kind of put it aside. So my question then to you is about how that you had gotten involved. You just answered, I guess your father was in.
Yeah.
So it seemed natural. I
was doing doors when I was 8 years old, knocking on doors with my dad.
Yeah, so or your dad.
It became very, very natural. I think I was helping on campaigns all through being a kid. College, joined what would be now the College Democrats, was the Young Democrats. Became the president of the UW-Madison one, was the executive director of the state College Democrats. And then wound up running for local office, county board, in my late 20s, and then ran for the state legislature, served there 14 years. And then now I'm just finishing my 12th year in Congress. So I've been doing this for 30 years, but doing magic even longer.
Well, when you were in school, did you run for like class president or other kinds of officers?
Yeah, I was our senior class president.
Well, there you go.
In high school,
it would have seemed natural.
exactly. And I was pretty fortunate because I had, especially in high school, I had a counselor who was very political, and they had changed the way we did our grading system. It used to be, A's were 4 points, B's were 3 points, C's were 2 points, right?
Yep.
Well, there's a couple really exclusive school districts in some rich areas of Chicago and New York and other areas that had a weighted grading system. So if you took a harder class, you got up more points than the arts,
which makes sense.
I had a real problem with changing that, but arts are never weighted. So instead, you don't look like as good of a student if you were a more well-rounded student. And a lot of us who either, I did some, things in, drama and stuff like that. Other people did it in music. You're kind of penalized when you're applying for a college.
It pushed you into engineering as opposed to being an artist.
Yeah. And it penalized you going to college. It looked like you weren't doing as well in your grade point. So we had fought that as students and did a major effort to do that. And I had a counselor who helped me on that. I had a speech teacher who really helped me a lot in doing the magic. He had me come back, and even after I took the class, and be an assistant to him to kind of keep learning those skills. And I was very fortunate because at 14 back home, I won a junior magician contest in Milwaukee, and that got me a spot in a junior magician contest in Chicago. And I think I took third place at 14 with all these high school kids, and I was 14. But it wasn't my show. The show I was doing was like a dancing cane and things to music. And I'm a talker, hence the politician, right?
Yeah, right.
So I wound up going a little different, but I paid for college largely doing magic shows in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where I
grew up.
Birthday
parties, or would you?
Birthday parties, Christmas. I had 21 Christmas parties, one December.
21, and it was a month December.
Yeah.
That sounds like a working pro to me, actually.
It was.
You were a student.
It worked out really well. And then I was spoiled because I never knew him at the time, but from my hometown of Kenosha was Norm Nielsen. He used to have a magic shop there.
I did not know that.
And Norm Nielsen was one of, without question, the biggest influence, without even being a direct influence to me, because—
And did you know him?
Not at that time, but he was at the Crazy Horse Saloon often when I was doing things like in my middle school and high school years. And if I wound up in the newspaper, which I did from time to time, the publisher of the paper liked that I was a kid doing magic. And he would get a copy of it because he was divorced, but his kids still lived there. and they were going to school there, he would send me a postcard, and I still have them, from Paris, from him performing at the Crazy Horse.
Holy,
saying,
how cool is that?
Just keep it up. You're doing a great job and all that. And to think about a guy who cares about someone he's never met from his hometown, but just that kind of a guy, wow, what an influence. And then, you know, I always thought he was like a magician's magician, right? That beautiful act was, you know, so interesting. And but
you didn't
know
at the time how good of a builder he was, I guess.
No, I knew that he had a shop, but I didn't know much more about that. There was a guy who owned a gas station who knew him when he was younger, and he would, you know, talk to me from time to time. But to have that kind of motivation, and that's why I said I still have the postcards from then. It really meant a lot. So I think it's just, you know, it's kind of a lesson to me too, that you want to try to, if someone really shows an interest in something,
encourage,
you can tell it's their passion, the more encouragement. Because if it had not been for that encouragement, I don't know if at that time, when there are a lot of different paths you can go as a kid, I would have kept going the path I did.
Wow. That's a great story. Because I know there are so many so many kids who get discouraged, or even people who are adults, let's say, to go to a Magic Club meeting, and they feel like they're, it's not that they're snubbed, but they feel kind of, they're not sure, they're a little socially awkward, and they're not welcomed into the club immediately. And so they think, I don't know if I really want to be part of this. And then they get discouraged. On the other hand, if you have a club that's very open and welcome, it's like a church, I guess, wherever you go into, you know, it depends upon how well you feel welcome. If not, then you're not going to stick with that.
In the Milwaukee Society of American Magicians chapter in Kenosha, was about 45 minutes south of there, was really good to me because I was one of the few kids. But, you know, that's where I met people like Rick Wilcox, who, as you know, today we're still really good friends. And that club was really good to kids like me as well. In fact, there was a couple, and I think the one person has passed, but kind of Lucy Simonson out of Racine, Wisconsin, used to do some magic. And when I was a kid, I didn't have, you know, maybe the ability to travel to things, and they would take me around. I remember I went to the Abbott's convention in Colon, Michigan, when I was in high school, and somehow they hooked up with Kikuchi from Japan and his nephew. They were traveling, doing a tour, and we all rented an RV together, and talk about an experience.
You were renting a van with Kikuchi?
Yes.
You stayed with him in a van?
Down
by the river.
Yeah, exactly. But it was so interesting because Kikuchi didn't really speak English. That's why he brought his nephew with. But I wound up with some Fickle Fires and some other stuff.
I was about to say, I bet you I still got a couple of those in my drawer at home also from him. He used to come to TAOM quite frequently also. Golly. And so David Seebach was another guy in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Did you know him pretty well? Do you? Or?
Not as well, because he wasn't as active with the club. He was performing at kind of one of his peaks at that time and very busy doing what he was. But there were a lot of people in that club. And there also was a Houdini Club of Wisconsin that it's probably not as active now as it was then, but, you know, people like Rick and I and others went to that very regularly, and
well, that's the convention also that they have, same time that the TOM is, which is Labor Day weekend, first week in September.
Yep.
So there's always a conflict, I guess, over there, and I think they still have the convention that meets.
They do. There. They do. It's not the same as it used to be, as far as there's a number of people who went, and there used to be a big Chicago presence as well.
I remember Don Weiberg telling me he'd competed in one time or two, I think, you know, that was a great convention. Enjoyed that one too.
Yeah. No, but it was nice growing up to have all that going on. And then being so close to Chicago, you know, we'd go down to Magic Inc. Or Mr. Ash's Trash, as we used to call it. He had a used shop. You literally walked in, it was like my bedroom. Things were in no order whatsoever.
I've been there. And then he had a room out back also, that little building or something. Oh my gosh. Something blew up back here.
But you just like dig through the shelves. What's this? And he'd go, and then he'd show you. And so I wound up with a lot of things from him. And used illusions from him that I used to do in my variety show. The high school variety show. Huh. I mean, at 14, I was doing a shadow box illusion
at 14.
In middle school. Yeah.
Who had your assistants? I mean, you have a sister that helped you?
No, you know what? I had, later in high school, I had one of my neighbors, Sherry Lewis, help me. But at that point, I was in junior high. I had two of my buddies, two guys helping me, spinning it around and all that. Okay. And I just remember my gym teacher at the time, who later went on to be the head of the athletic department for the school district, he liked magic and he saw me do that. And I wasn't the greatest athlete. So one time that we were playing baseball and he just pulled me out of the field and he just made me hang out next to him and we talked magic while he's like helping everyone else play baseball.
Yeah.
He enjoyed magic so much he just wanted to talk about it a little bit. And go
so
through.
He was a magician himself or just interested in it?
He just loved it as an observer. I think he just got back from Las Vegas. And Yeah, a lot of good memories from growing up in that area that really helped me because that way, you know, college was largely paid for. I also worked a little during college, but I didn't come from a family of means. So
University of Wisconsin?
Yeah, University of Wisconsin, Madison. Mm-hmm. And it was a good experience.
Did you do magic throughout college, or were you in a fraternity and performed there or anything?
No, I did a little bit in college, but I was also doing politics, right? So, I always kind of had this parallel track of things, right, that I was doing. And then a little bit after college, but then I wound up starting a business pretty young in my 20s, mm-hmm. That kind of took me out of the picture for a while. And I actually had left magic then until...
To focus on... The other business.
Yeah, running a business, and then running for office at the same time. So
and you probably just got married, I'm guessing.
No, that was a little later, okay. But at that time, though, it was juggling those two things was plenty. But then coming back, 2010, if you may remember, there was an election that was a sweeping Republican majority, and that put Democrats out of power, and I was a Democrat, and I actually was in a leadership position in the legislature, and that brought me back to it. So I remember going to a convention in San Diego, and I forget if it was the IBM or SAM, and I should remember that, but what I do remember, the three people I remembered the most and met for the first time, and because I had been out of it, didn't know of, were Josh Jay, Sean Farquhar, and Rafael Benatar. I remember their lectures, how much I really enjoyed them and appreciated them. That got me back into everything.
Well, by hearing your lectures then again. What made you decide, hey, I think I'll go to that one? I mean, San Diego is a long way from Wisconsin.
At that point, I was living in the Madison, Wisconsin area, in the legislature. I was serving the legislature. But I don't know why I picked that one, to be honest, other than, you know, I think the writing was on the wall a little ahead of time that it was going to be a devastating election. I knew I was going to have some free time. And so going from being super busy to... All right. But I'm really glad because from that moment on, it just reinvigorated everything. And really interesting was a couple of years prior to that, one of my colleagues in the legislature's kid was really into magic. And I gave him everything that I had from all those years because I thought I was out of it.
You're out of it, right.
Yeah. So now I get the opportunity of rebuilding everything. So
you didn't go back to him and said, about those things.
No, I don't.
I kind of changed my mind.
But I'll tell you, books especially are a passion of mine. And
you got a good library now?
Got about 1,360 some books.
Okay,
right
you
now.
Beat me. I have about 1,100.
Yeah, for me, I decided that since I have the ability to buy some now, but maybe not read them, I'm just trying to stock up so I have a library for when I am in retirement too. But I always fly with a book or two, and it's just
hardcover, or do you read them like download PDFs or
I'm
digital?
Still
or
old school.
Old school, sure. Yeah. I like the smell and the feel of books.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's extra weight, but I throw a book in or something too.
Oh, but it's just, you know, and at night to read a book, and you know, I even have the book light and all that kind of stuff. But I do enjoy what you still get out of a book, you know. And even just on the flight out here, I was reading the Genie magazine, and there was a really interesting effect that I just enjoyed. And you know, reading, you got to read it a little slower, right? Mm-hmm. You know, for magic, we get spoiled, I think, by all the videos. And
that's true. You got to slow down. Wait a minute. He said, "The left hand. I'm going to be moving up."
Exactly. You do that, but you learn it, I think, a little better almost that way, rather than just parroting what someone does. But yeah, I've definitely got a book problem.
Had a book problem. Well, who is your favorite author? In other words, there's somebody saying, I don't care what he has out, I'm going to buy that. I mean, like, I love Stephen Minch's writing, for an example, you know, or Laurie Haas, you know. There's some people I just like. It's kind of like Stephen King, you know, I like him, or Lee Child, you know, or some authors that I really like.
Honestly, I mean, I've got to know and get to be pretty good friends with Josh Jay, but almost anything he'll put out.
Sure.
And
anything Vanishing Ink in general, Andy Gladwell, those guys.
Anything Vanishing does. Yeah, and Andy too is great. And and the way they do the books, they're so nice. And like, you could tell they love books.
Yeah.
So the books are such a nice product out of there. But
not just good quality, but good content also, the stuff that's in it. I mean, my gosh,
Yeah, and lately I've been doing a little more on mentalism, even though I do a lot of close-ups, because I used to do these Magic Monday videos.
I want to talk about that in a minute.
Okay, so I needed a lot of content, but now I've gone twice to the ProMystic Summit prior to Magic Live, and an interesting conversation one day at lunch with Christopher Carter that kind of really put a real light bulb in my head for someday what I could do after I'm in this career of being in Congress.
Yeah.
You know, all the groups that come to Washington and lobby Congress, they all are trying to figure out how to best talk to their members of Congress. And what would be better than maybe an hour show that's part magic and part how to actually talk to your member of Congress, because so many groups do it bad and so many groups do it well, but you might as well
learn
how to be best, most effective. Yeah. And because you're a member of Congress, I'm never going to get away from that, especially back home, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to be part of my character, no matter what. People will know you as that first.
True.
So I might as well then lean on those strengths. And, you know, the fact that I've worked with what I would argue is some of the best liars in the country probably puts me in a good place to do truth lie tricks or reading people from, because you have to get their votes to be able to influence people. And so it really, I think that's an area that I found not kind of the traditional mentalism, but a kind of a different way of using it, but very much related to who I am that I'm never going to be able to escape.
Yeah, because you've got to tell people that you have to get into the mindset or the mind of someone else, and here's a way of trying to do that in order to get them to be on your side. I think that's a very important skill that a lot of times magicians might overlook as far as sales tools go, of trying to get past the gatekeeper, if you will. And I did that quite frequently. I may not have done, back when I was in the 9-to-5 workaday job market, I could get past the secretaries or the front office because, and I wanted to see so-and-so, because I would do a card trick or something after I'd signed in. I say, well, I'm here to see whoever. And while I'm waiting, I'm a magician also. Would you like to see something?
Yeah.
And that way, when you come in, you get a much friendlier smile. You want a cup of coffee? He's doing such and such, or I'll make sure that he sees you right away.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know, because once you get in, that person has limited, particularly I would think in Washington, you got a limited amount of time because you got everybody coming in. But if you can get past that person, I think, and kind of get in, then I think that then you can get some quality time. So that's a good idea of trying to, that's also, I think, an idea that magicians could use themselves about maybe training other people to learn how to get, again, past the gatekeeper.
Yeah. And it just, you know, for me, and it, you know, another time too, I did the very first retreat that Vanishing Ink had in Costa Rica. And that's where I had one of those aha moments too, in just having conversations with people about, you know, I think it was Andy Godwin who said, you know, for you, it's easy who you are because you've got this really interesting, you know,
built in.
Yeah, who you are and all that.
Yeah.
And I was kind of more like, how do you escape from it? But it's not. Instead, you just double down on it. Mm. And, you know, I think in my colleagues, I've done a lot with them. In fact, I've used magic to help me get a committee assignment. You know, there's 22 committees in Congress, and leadership essentially generally is the one who's putting you into committees.
Okay.
And a lot of it is impacted by what region you're from and a lot of things. But Nancy Pelosi was the leader at the time, and I wanted to get on the Appropriations Committee. And the top three committees are the Appropriations Committee, Ways and Means, and Energy and Commerce, where more activity happens than maybe some of the other committees. And I really wanted to get on the Appropriations Committee. So I knew that there was a dinner she was going to be at that I was doing a magic show at for the Progressive Caucus, their retreat. So I made sure I did the magic square because I wanted her to think I was really good at math.
That is clever.
Yeah.
Good thinking.
And it worked, you know, at the end. I did wind up, I can't say that was the direct, you know, causation of what happened, but it certainly didn't hurt. And, you know, I wound up doing then since then fundraisers for colleagues during COVID. I had a three trick set I would do via Zoom on behalf of them because you could do it from anywhere. And some of my colleagues, Barbara Lee from California, has flown me out to Oakland to do it at her fundraisers live. And it's just been a really nice experience.
During COVID, that had to be a difficult time to try to lead because particularly in Congress, you couldn't get everybody all together. And so did Congress meet via Zoom or something?
We did a little bit. Committees met via Zoom. A lot of stuff happened via Zoom. That was a really weird period, right, for us all.
Yeah.
But then we did wind up going back because we kind of had to. I mean, so much of humor interaction is what our business is and we needed. But then there's no flights because, you know, there still were very few.
You can't get there.
And I live in Madison, Wisconsin, where we have a small airport. It's really convenient. But I think, you know, I only had the direct flights to D.C. There only was one a day prior was gone for about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And I would route through Charlotte, Atlanta, Detroit, go backwards to Minneapolis, but they all took a long time. It was taking me longer to fly there than someone from California because of wait times in between and all the rest. But it was different. But we used you know, Zoom for where we could in with those meetings. But with the fundraisers, it was really interesting because it was one of those where, you know, I had a nice little, I'd start with Boyve. I did a little work with Michael Close on this to get, he got me thinking in the right order how to do it. But I did a little with Boyve first and it was like a 1 out of 4. Then I went to AnyCard with Richard Sanders, which I really like. I think that's a nice effect. That's like a 1 out of 52. And then I'm going to forget, I think it's Call Me By My Name or something like that by David Carsaro has a trick.
I love that. Sure.
Yeah, with the names. And that's what I would close with because it seemed like more than 1 out of 52 because it was
every name basically, out there. Theoretically.
And I would do it with the candidate to ask some questions personally about them because everyone was interested. They're there at a fundraiser for that candidate to get to the card. But it was just
he'd
like
a
nice...
with Penn & Teller with that trick too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, Michael Close told me a little bit about how it was special, about how they did that with it too. And that was fun. So
with a wrist kill? That's all it was? A wrist kill?
I know. But I know. Isn't that great how sometimes... Yeah. The simplest, and then listening to Paul Gertner at this convention about how he did all the stuff with Penn & Teller. That was really fascinating.
Yeah, time after time. I mean, he returned like 4 times, I think.
Five times he was on
five,
the show.
Okay, I think he's fooled them three. Like every other time, I think it seems like he was there.
Yeah, and, but just the thought that he did and what he would do at the end to actually add that extra fool for them was really fascinating.
Yeah. And the expanse that he would go to as well, I thought was kind of amazing. And so
that's the second time I've seen that lecture and there are parts I forgot. That's why I love even doing repeat lectures like that because you just get even more out of it. And then last night I did the Bernardo Sedlicek
workshop.
Oh my God. I got very little sleep last night because of it, but about 3.5 hours. You know, he's one of my favorite card guys. I love the Spanish school in general. And I had to ask him because I didn't want to insult him by saying he's Spanish school because he's Brazilian,
right?
But he did get his more formalized training through the Spanish school.
Escuela. Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, that was fascinating to hear him and talk to him and see how he developed the show. And, we did very few tricks and we did a lot about everything else. And it was really, really interesting.
I was going to ask you a little bit about that. And I think that it's appropriate to hear. It's kind of a little bit of inside baseball since we are at a Magic convention then right now. And for those who are listening, we are here at the Tricks Convention of 2024. And one of the performers, as we said, was Paul Gertner, but also Bernardo Sedlicek. And he was giving a workshop and he also, I know, had something that he was selling after his lecture saying this was a 10.5 hour workshop kind of a thing that I do that goes into a lot more detail. And even during the lecture that he gave for 1 hour, he taught one trick and the rest was kind of theory, which was very important. And everybody was hanging on every word. Bernardo is such a great teacher and a great thinker. And it is hard to kind of put that all just into an hour, but he is able to summarize and clarify, I think, better than most, and his English is excellent.
He's young. He's 27.
Exactly.
So I love Danny D'Ortiz, and someday on my bucket list is to go to, you know, his school, his home to learn with him. Blackpool's on my bucket list. I got a few things I got to get to that are a little hard with my current schedule.
I was going to say, you got this little thing here in Washington you got to handle, first of all.
If it wasn't for this day job, you know, I'd be fine.
This darn J-O-B thing.
But, you know, to get a chance to spend, you know, 3.5 hours with a relative small number of people to really ask those questions, I really... He's so wise for his years, you know, that he learned a lot of that prior to going to the Spanish school. And he even said he really kind of developed himself around maybe 2017, 2018. I remember seeing him the first time was at Magi Fest. He wasn't on the billing. He was just there at the end. Mm-hmm. And at the very end of the convention, you've had a great convention. And there's this guy set up at a table who literally was frying my brain even more.
Just kind
of
sessioning
my brain was ready to be, be fried anymore at that point. But ever since then, and but that was a fascinating
workshop. So what'd you learn? The reason I wanted to kind of focus on this for people to get something out of this who are listening then as well, can you pass on maybe a summary or maybe a tip or two that he passed on to you guys last night? I mean, within the course of 3.5 hours, I'm sure that it kind of all gets jumbled together, but there has to be one or two things.
Things that I enjoy the most, he has a show he's been working on for a long time, years, that he's going to premiere in March in Brazil. And it's... I don't know if I should say, I'll just say he's got a show that's going to do down there on a regular basis that sounds very unique, never been done, that he could find it in researching it. So we asked a little bit about how you structure your show, and he's got the, you know, 5/6 components that he puts together. But then even just down to the list, he puts down a list of personality traits that he wants people to know. So that as he's, and he doesn't officially script, he kind of does it and then scripts after. He has an interesting style. He talked about how he does that as well. But when he talks about all that, that way he's making sure he's incorporating that into everything that he does. And it was very interesting because I find, maybe it's more me, but I think close-up performers are a little more who they are as people as opposed to stage performers, right? Sometimes, they say what works. A more expanded self when we perform, right? Often yes, is the
exactly.
style.
Yeah, yeah.
But with close-up performers, it has to be even more, you're connecting so close as one-on-one. And hearing him to put that kind of thought into it and then how he structures the show for pacing and just hearing his aspect, because he is one of my very favorite performers. So I was curious to see, how that kind of came about. And then with the show coming up, it sounds like... he's been working on this, I thought he said, for 6 years, but I don't know if I have that part right, because it was pretty late when we wrapped up last night.
He has a little bit different kind of a performing style, because you can tell the Spanish school,
yeah.
a lot of them have the frenetic kind of things like Dani Ortiz and so many others have from the Juan Tamara school, basically. Mm-hmm. Bernardo's is a little bit different than that. His is not quite that. I mean, there are some aspects of it that are somewhat similar, but the bottom line, as far as fooling you, are just as visceral and deep.
He absolutely, and that's why he still does that whenever I watch him do it, and I love that. But also there's like a playful joyness, and
yes,
and I love that, right?
Yeah, well, that's exactly that's the Spanish school again, yeah. with all those guys,
Although, who I miss not seeing anymore is Joe Barry. When I saw Joe Barry in live, and then also in some of the work he's done, he also had that. And I don't know if he went to the Spanish school or not. He talked about improvising, but I from what I understand, he doesn't travel as much and do this anymore. Mm-hmm. But that was another person who just out of England, who just had. I love that style, because to me, I remember as a kid, the nothing beats fun sort of, I forgot who had that slogan in doing magic. And I love that because, most people, life isn't all that easy, right? I mean, what is it? Like 40% of people don't have $400 for an emergency expense if something would come up. I mean, people are...
No savings.
No savings. People are just working hard to get by, right?
Mm-hmm. And day to day.
I think we just saw that in some of the election stuff, right? I mean, people just... it's survival and taking care of your family and having opportunity. Your luxury is maybe that personal vacation or that camper or your boat, your snowmobile, whatever. And just being able to have fun and put those worries aside is part of what I love about magic, right? We're helping people to do that.
And that's not something that is endemic just in the U.S. That's global. I was at the Magic Castle working one time in the close-up room, and there was an English couple who were pensioners, and they said, this is our first trip to America. It's been our bucket list, and we had saved our money during our work life to be able to come, not only the United States, but to come to the Magic Castle, said, this is my ultimate dream of anything I ever wanted to do in my entire life. And I'm thinking, and you're going to see my show. No pressure.
But
you should think of every show as that way, as you don't know how you're affecting someone.
Yeah. And that kid that could be affected. And I had someone, they brought their 15-year-old son up to me at a fundraiser recently I was at, not mine, it was someone else's. And they said, I don't know if you remember Jackson, but you met him when, whatever. And he was liking magic, but whatever I did stuck in his mind. And he's been doing that, now for a few more years.
Wow.
And Norm Nielsen for me. I mean, I don't know if I'd be at a magic convention right now if it wasn't for Norm Nielsen sending that postcard of encouragement when I was a kid. And think how impactful that is. Mm-hmm. I've always believed, I've heard a theory, and I've for whatever reason, I've grabbed onto it, that there's about 100 people in your life that make up who you are, that you've learned from,
never
that you're
heard
a part
that.
Of.
That's an interesting
And when you think about it, because there are certain people, and I think that you learn from in all different fields, but kind of make you, you're a composite of all those people.
Sure.
And to think that, I look back and, Norm Nielsen was one of those for me, and he probably doesn't even know what his past, but he probably never even knew how impactful just sending a couple postcards from Paris.
Have you told Lupe that story?
I have. And unfortunately, when I got a chance to meet him, he was already a little bit in decline.
Yeah.
And so, I'll never forget it. And I remember posting it on some social media, and some other people came back and made some comments too. I think I wasn't uniquely benefited by Norm Nielsen's kindness.
Yeah. So tell me, has there been something in which you feel that you have impacted? I mean, you talk about that young child's life. Is there something that you've gotten like some direct impact? Or like I remember Rolando Santos tell me a story about when he was someplace and he just was at a coffee shop and he saw some people and he did some magic for them. He just kind of was drawn to them and found out that apparently that was the last meal they're having with their mother who was going into a hospice and would be dead in a week or something or whatever. And so this was the most fun we've had and you've created a memory and made her laugh that we'll never forget. Has there been something like that that you've done?
You know, it's interesting. There's a restaurateur in Madison, David Heide, who's had a number of different restaurants off and on. And his grandmother was Florence Perry Heide, a children's author growing up in Kenosha. She lived down there and she would have me in high school at her house for the grandkids doing magic on a fairly regular basis. And I did, I guess, a birthday party for his first birthday, which clearly he doesn't remember, but he knew later over the years. And we're friends now and we connect now. He has magicians at his restaurant now. Like you think of the impact because, and he remembers it. So we've, and his parents also who now live in that area, when I see them, it's as if we've been friends forever. And that was 40 years ago when all that happened. But, you know, the fact that we do have that influence and we may not realize that, but to this day, he's now hiring magicians at a restaurant or restaurants that he has because he enjoyed that as a kid. It was something he remembered. He still has a picture. I had a head full of hair. And for people who don't know me, I have no hair now. And it's just so interesting. I mean, I had a, he has a, it's a, it was a white black tuxedo with a red ruffle shirt. I was classy.
Of course you were, yeah.
Yeah. and he sent me that picture and he still has it and uses his blackmail now.
Blackmail for running for office. So, you know, I still got this picture. You know, it's going to, you know, lose one vote at least, you know, because this. I want to talk a little bit about also videos that you do in just a minute, but also about Washington Magic. I know that you work with Eric Henning and John McLaughlin, some of those guys. And tell me something about that, how often they get together show.
Because I'm not around on the weekends, that's when they're mainly doing stuff.
Okay.
So I haven't had a chance.
You fly back and forth?
I do every week. Usually 3 out of 4 weeks a month I'm in D.C. and I fly home on the weekends because that's where I represent. I'm there to be the voice of South
Central.
You
say 3 out of 4 weeks, mean 3 out of 4 days? Or you mean
three out of four weeks
per month?
Yeah, per month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So it's a lot. We're out there, except for August. That's 1 month that we're always in district. But I'm always gone on the weekend because I should be back home making sure that I'm properly representing, you know, people in your district. So that's where they do a lot of their activities. But I've gotten to meet John through a number of other things. And, you know, one of the sweetest, nicest, you know, people. And then I got to know Brian Curry a little more recently, too, from the Vanishing Ink retreat in D.C. I helped them do a couple things there, including that we did a Capitol tour that turned out to be very unique because we wanted to do it after hours because I can do that. I it's my workplace, so I can get them in there.
Yeah.
And it's pretty unique to do that. And we had Danny DeOrtiz doing a lecture, so we had him do it. Unfortunately, House leadership wouldn't get us a room in the visitor center, which we were hoping. There was no one there. It was on a Saturday that this happened. But because I'm on the appropriations committee, we got to use the appropriations room. So this beautiful room with all these august photos or paintings of, you know, former chairs and, you know, all the DC-ness of the room.
Yeah.
And then we were, you know, got Danny DeOrtiz throwing cards and doing everything, doing a lecture there. And then we went and did a Capitol tour. And what was so interesting is, we get there, and because it was a little later than they had thought, because everything just took a little longer to get there, they were testing their backup generator and the lights went out on us in the Capitol and the alarm started going off. So even though we got to see some of the stuff that we wanted to see and I could point out on paintings, we've now got an experience instead of seeing things on paintings and then went into the House floor and we were able to bring everyone on the House floor and sit in the chairs and see that. And then we had the speaker balcony. We could bring 12 at a time. And at night, because it was later, we didn't plan on this. It's so beautiful to see the mall because you're facing the mall and with all the
it's lit up.
Yeah, the Washington Monument at the end and everything.
The long pool.
So we got everyone into that privately. And it was just a really great experience. They always put on great retreats. But it was nice to combine, again, my two loves of magic and politics and be able to share that with some other people. And a lot of people said that was such a unique experience because it wasn't just a tour of the Capitol. It was alarms going off, the lights going off on us, everything else that happened.
Yeah, it looks like all of a sudden we're going on lockdown. What happened?
Yeah, yeah. No, It was definitely unique. I've never had that happen before.
I guess he didn't stick a card on the ceiling or anything like that.
No, that would be hard because, you know, this is something I learned out of there. It's so tall in the rotunda that I think it's 280 some feet. Hmm. You can put the Statue of Liberty, not with the base, but the actual statue inside the Capitol Rotunda. That's how tall it is.
Holy cow.
So I don't know if anyone I know could do a card on ceiling there, but it'd probably be a really bad idea.
Holy cow. Well, yeah, nevertheless, yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like I remember Mike Amar telling a story when he was in Dallas one time, decades ago, and he thought, that's a pretty high ceiling in the airport terminal. And he said, I think, what if I can, just on his own? And he did that. And the security guard walked over and he said, did you do that? And he said, yeah, I did, quite proudly, you know, and said, well, when will I come down? And he said, never. That's going to stay up there. And he said, no, it's coming down. you're gonna make sure it does.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah,
he had to pay for scaffolding or something to get this thing taken down from there.
Yeah. No, it's a very, very high ceiling, but it's also such a beautiful building. But it turns out a lot of magicians like to do tricks with $2 bills. And the scene on the back of the $2 bill is one of the paintings that's in the Capitol Rotunda.
Oh.
So that's kind of a little extra interesting.
I was trying to work one time in one of the Treasury buildings in Houston, Texas. And I said trying to. Actually, there was an investment broker who had booked me to, and they had rented this place and for their clients, and they wanted to have me do some walk around. And I have to talk to somebody, first of all, to tell them what I was going to be bringing in and everything, because I can't bring in a switchblade and do a Bill Lemon or whatever kind of a thing, you know, certain things that we can't. But I didn't get very far because they said, we don't allow magicians in the Treasury.
What?
Exactly my point. I said, what? And they said, yeah, this is something that is above, you know, just us locally. This is a national thing, and said there are certain types of entertainers that are entertainment that we don't allow in, like clowns. And so we have some people who will want to have this like as a wedding venue, and very limited as to how many, if any, you know, weddings that they do in certain bands that they will allow and others that they won't. But for some reason, I guess they think magicians are going to be sneaky, or con artists are going to steal something, or they know about how to get past systems, or we have certain secret knowledge. It's like, no magicians in the Treasury.
Oh, that's crazy.
You hadn't heard that before?
No.
Okay.
No.
I thought maybe you could elucidate, but
no. You know, in fact, when you start thinking about, because my two loves are magic and
politics.
There's certain things in the Congressional Record, for example. Rick and Susan Wilcox celebrated their 25th year of their theater.
Right.
So I had something entered on behalf of them, because they were one of the first theaters in the country doing what they've done. And they've been very successful doing it. And almost everyone who's not everyone.
Over some adversity, too.
Totally. And they bootstrapped it. And I mean, there's so many things in their history about it. And then other people who've started these theaters now have gone, and Rick and Susan are extremely kind and gracious and have helped them to start what they're doing. And also, you know, Rick made a comment. I said, oh yeah, you know, not many magicians in the history in the Congressional Record, you know, what's said on the floor of Congress. And he's like, oh, how many? I go, you know, that's a really good question. So I had the Congressional Research Service do a quick little thing on it, and we got a list of everyone going back to, I think, the early 70s when they kept the records. And it's interesting, you know, sometimes it might have been someone saying something like, and I might have this wrong, so I'd have to look back at the full list, but it was something like someone said something, you know, they did a Copperfield or something like that, just talking, but others were like recognizing.
Oh, Houdini, obviously, I would think. And
Houdini, Harry and Gay Blackstone were in there, Siegfried and Roy, David Copperfield, a few others. But it was just interesting to see that. And then also, you know, on the Appropriations Committee, we have oversight of the Library of Congress, which is, you know, such a national treasure. And I didn't realize it until that retreat that Vanishing Ink had, 25,000 different magic artifacts.
Wait.
Our books and artifacts are at the Library of Congress.
Oh, 25,000.
Yeah. And it's really a fact.
That makes sense. When I published Psychological Subtleties for Banachek, I got a Library of Congress number.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, we got a copy of that in there also. So I hadn't thought about.
But they also have old historical things. They have a good chunk of Houdini's old book collection, right, and stuff.
Hmm.
So one of the things I did is I added some language that
Is it in a certain section, or is it just kind of scattered around, or do you know?
I don't know, because you don't, they'll, for us, they bring us like stuff rather than you kind of go to the stuff. Yeah, yeah. But we had added some language in an appropriations bill for them to digitize more of Houdini's book collection. So that was kind of an interesting thing. I don't know how often a magic related law has happened, but that was something that we had tried to get done.
So when you say their names were read, were they read into the congressional record and for what purpose?
Yeah, that's the thing. Sometimes it would be someone just speaking on the floor. Sometimes it'd be like, recognizing people, that's one of the things we do on the floor of Congress, but it has to be words said on the floor of Congress for them to appear in the congressional record. Okay. But I was talking to, I think, someone at Genium, like, this would be an interesting article to take a look at all this and who said what at what time and what was going on in history,
in
why that
context
was relevant. Yeah, exactly. Because I think, but again, it just shows the integration of magic into the
I just can't imagine why that Harry and Gay Blackstone would necessarily be mentioned. I mean, I could, I know.
I think twice they were. I think twice they were too. That was what was interesting. That's why it stands out in my memory.
Yeah.
And there were about 20 some references going back to the early 70s.
Huh.
So, and then I was told, and I don't know enough about this, but when I first got elected, and when you're first elected, you know, you're swimming and everything, trying to learn it, that there was a magician in the 50s who might have did a magic trick on the House floor, produced a feather bouquet. So I got to learn a little more about that.
He did or tried to? Or?
He did, did. Okay. But, you know, we have weird rules. Like, you can't have interactive, like, you can't have a whiteboard and write on the floor of Congress. Okay. You can't do interactive. You can have a poster. But
it's already printed, but you can't print something on it.
Yeah, for whatever reason, that's one of our weird rules. So I don't know if you could interactively do that, but it might give me some idea what I need to do someday.
Yeah. Is that one of those things it's better to ask for forgiveness?
Let's say that's not a bad idea.
Enough said. Hush, hush, wink, wink.
I've learned a lot of that in life, especially in Washington, where things don't necessarily make sense. Certainly not.
Brother, tell me.
Yeah. So sometimes it's just easier to go the other way.
Yes. Interesting. And also, I remember Dal Sanders, who was past national president, had worked then with Eric Hogue, who was a mayor at the time of getting
Wiley, Texas.
Yeah, a bill passed. And were you involved with that? Or, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So it was trying to recognize magic as an art.
Performing art.
And it didn't happen at the time. The Republicans were in charge. And for whatever reason, Pete Sessions, a Republican from Texas, was helping Eric Wiley as the member. Mm-hmm. And then I got brought into it. I met Eric and everything. Mm-hmm. And that's where I met David Copperfield.
Yeah.
And yeah, I got to admit, as a kid, I had posters of David Copperfield, Doug Henning and Siegfried and Roy on my wall. And all of a sudden I'm meeting, you know, one of your childhood heroes, David Copperfield. And what's really interesting is not only did I get to do that for him and just, you know, met him a little bit that time, but then the New York Historical Society was going to have a part of his exhibit and do an interview with him in the auditorium. And they asked...
With Copperfield.
Copperfield, yeah. And they asked him who he wanted to interview him. And he goes, well, can I have my friend Mark? And
I'd
really not known him all that well at the time, but I'm very honored. Of course, I did it. And we've gotten to be actually very good friends. And David is a really brilliant guy. Talk about a Renaissance man on any subject. He is extremely well-informed and very generous and very kind guy.
Well, it's kind of like Eric Hogue has also said that David's a very close friend of his. And you got involved, I guess, with him too.
Yeah, and that's why he was trying to help us on that at the time. And then since then, Congress has passed rules that change memorializing Congress, and that's what that kind of a resolution was. So now under the last—
Is that the first step to getting some—
No, that would be passing the resolution. It would be memorializing Congress. That's how you could do it because it's not putting something into statute. It's a different type of resolution.
Okay.
But that's been taken out of the rules. So now we can't do it unless the congressional rules change. But that doesn't mean there's not other ways to try to get something done. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And I think that there are other ways we could still try to do it. The importance of which I think is, one, might help people on some intellectual property. At some level, it helps you get some of the grants for the arts that are available, right? And just the recognition. I mean, jazz is recognized as an art, right? Why wouldn't magic be recognized as an art? So we're not giving up. It's just right now we can't do it as of the last several sessions because the rules changed on the floor.
I know in some years past, a friend of mine, Harry Maurer's wife, Carol Ann, was trying to get something in the newspaper in Houston about a show that was coming up and said, we don't publish that because we don't recognize magic as an art.
Ah. See? Yeah.
And so it's that kind of a thing. Yep. So it's important that it does get recognized. So go ahead.
In Canada, I think this is from Canada, you know, they can get grants because it's recognized. And that's another thing. So I think if there's a way we could do that also, then people might be eligible for some of the arts grants as well, too.
That's right.
That right now, maybe they're not. So there's good reasons to do it. It's just right now we do have a bit of a stumbling block. So we're trying to figure out some plan Bs and Cs to do it.
So, but it is something that's kind of an ongoing thing that you're working with?
And yeah. I mean, the initial thrust has been taken away. And, you know, again, that's been entered into the congressional record recognizing it. So I think Pete Sessions did that at the time, that in lieu of passing something on the floor. But to formalize it is really the goal, I think, so that we can actually maybe get some of the other benefits out of it.
Is that one of those things that has to be, not lobbied, what am I trying to say, where you have to go around and get people to
signed onto it. No, absolutely. In fact, we were doing it bipartisan the right way because we had Pete Sessions helping. I had Dina Titus, who represents Las Vegas, who has the biggest concentration of actual magicians, right? So we actually had her take the lead when the Democrats were in charge on it, you know, trying to get at the time, and Pete did it when Republicans, because it's always better to have whoever's in charge, you know, lead something like that. But she was involved. Robert Adderholt from rural northwestern Alabama, he and I become friends over magic. He was a subcommittee chair on the agriculture subcommittee at Appropes when I first came in, and he wanted to have breakfast because I got on the subcommittee. And it turned out it was going to be a half hour breakfast. And next thing you know, it was an hour and 40 minutes because we found out that we're about the same age and he liked magic as a kid. And he got talking about something. He remembers this wallet. You'd open it up and the fire would come out. So, of course, I picked up a fire wallet for him. And then he had me come over to the office to kind of show him what to do. But, you know, it really has helped to forge a friendship across the aisle, which doesn't happen in that institution too often. People like Jamie Raskin, you know, a guy of national prominence on TV a lot from Maryland, loves magic and does some card tricks at our retreats. Melanie Stansbury from New Mexico. Chuck Fleischman, a Republican from Tennessee, is a second cousin of Harry Houdini.
Oh, my God.
And so he and I are friends, and we talk about that. He has a cane that some Scottish Magic Society gave his second cousin years ago. He has that and a few books signed by Houdini.
Yeah.
And so it's been interesting for my colleagues. And then through the videos that I do, I brought colleagues in. And so now we've had a number of them where members are doing magic tricks with me. And it's been fun.
I was going to ask about having a club. Have you thought about getting together and have like a coffee club of a dozen of you or however many?
You have caucuses in Congress, right? But I don't know if there's anyone else who's actually actively doing magic, right? So it would be, I guess you could have it as an appreciation sort of thing. But I just love that it's so many people I know, doesn't matter party affiliation, that I've made friends with through doing it. And in fact, Ted Lieu recently, who's in our Democratic leadership right now from California, he told me his first date with his wife was at the Magic Castle.
How cool is that?
Yeah. And he was, and recently I got him a pass to go to the Magic Castle for four people, and he loves it. And I did a Magic Monday with him, which was fun with a real die. So that was kind of...
Well, now that's what I want to kind of end with in talking about Magic Monday, because you've been doing this for a long number of years, I guess, as far as trying to explain like how bills get passed in a magic way.
Yeah.
So tell me something about this.
So I decided my first session, I didn't want to be the magic guy. I wanted to be known for my, you know, political chops first.
Of course.
And then once that was done, I decided to start these Magic Mondays. And, you know, being the foolish guy who loves magic a lot, the first year I did 50 of the 52 weeks, we did a Magic Monday with a unique trick, which given my day gig, I start the day at about 8 a.m. and I get home about 9:30 at night. It's not a lot of time to be putting together this, right? So I really burned through a lot of stuff, but it was fun. People liked it. You know, when I go to schools, they want to see me do magic. People often bring it up when I'm out and about. So then the next year we went to every other week, and then we would show like a past one or another magician. And then we got to about every third week. And then eventually COVID happened and we couldn't really do the same way. So that stopped it. And I haven't been able to bring it back just out of being so busy. But my goal is to bring it back in January. So I'm going on vacation in November. I'm taking with me a bunch of different things that are great Magic Monday effects. I'm going to make sure I come out of there with five or six so that when I get back, we're going to film a few, have a few ready in the hopper.
Yeah.
But I want to bring it back because it's just a fun way to talk about Washington. And again, I've done it with Democrats and Republicans, getting across, you know, the normal divide.
Is it just you talking or do you have someone else? Or
Usually I have then someone being the assistant. I don't want to do I've done a few where it's just me talking, but honestly, that's pretty boring, I think, for
and
what
how
I'm
long
doing.
Is it? Like 5 minutes, 15 minutes?
Try short. We try to make it short because you got to be for social media. It should be probably even shorter than I'm doing.
As
right?
a politician, you know, sound bites.
Yeah. So, I mean, I try to keep it between a minute and a half and 3 minutes, probably.
So, is this kind of like, remember the cartoons about passing a bill that had a little, you know, kind of,
The how a bill becomes a law?
Yeah.
Back then?
Yeah.
Kind of. But I'll use it to talk about how, you know, different aspects of Washington and it's a way to really do some magic so people can enjoy it. But talking about Washington is just a different way to deliver it. And
yeah,
I've had so many people who just, you know, really like it. And, you know, that's one of the things David knew about before I had actually officially met him.
He wanted to copy that
for the museum. Yeah. He wanted to have and stuff. So, but again, it's been off for 4 years and it's definitely time to bring it back. So.
And it's all been a brainchild of yours, or have you actually got like a brain trust group that you run things by?
No, I mean, unfortunately, with my schedule, Rick Wilcox is one of my closest magic friends, and I see him way too little, you know, these days because of the job that I have. But when we do get together, he and I, in fact, I was trying to do a magic trick when Barack Obama was coming during the campaign to my district, and Rick and I were working on something a day before, and I should have tried to do something new, but, you know, that's what sometimes you do, right? And so I decided that morning that it might be hard to do it because I wanted to have more practice than one day on what we were going to do. I was going to produce a bottle of beer. There was a brewery that he had the owner of the brewery in his box at one of the State of the Unions when he was president. Yep. And I wanted to produce that, you know, nice cold beer for him. Well, fortunately, I did wind up not doing it that day because the former president's plane had oil leaking and they had to drive him from Chicago and he came about 5 hours late. I would have had a bottle of Spotted Cow in my back pocket for about 5.5 hours.
Warm beer.
Yeah, it would have been more like tepid tea than anything else. But
thank you, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
And so those videos are available on YouTube that people can watch.
You
just look up Mark Pocan.
Yeah, I should know what my YouTube site is, but it's
you should.
Rep Mark Pocan, I think, P-O-C-A-N. It's like the word pecan, but instead of a E, it's an O.
Do you have a social media group or somebody who does this for you, or do you do this
yourself? Oh, no, my office does this. Yeah, I mean, members of Congress, you know,
I think you'd have certain requirements you can and can't do.
Yeah, that's why it's never vote for, it's never anything like that. In fact, I try to keep it even away from ideology as much as possible, right? Because I just want to be able to explain Washington.
As if you were just a teacher, a professor in college, or even a professor in elementary school, trying to say simply, here is how this happens and use a magic principle.
And that way I can do it with colleagues from both sides of the aisle. And I think more people can enjoy it. And, you know, and again, like I said, it is something that's been unifying for me in a town where unifying is not a priority for too many people. So I like that aspect as well because, you know, especially after coming off election where, you know, everyone's, you know, supercharged one way or the other. At the end of the day, we're all, you know, Americans, right? We have so much more in common. It doesn't really matter in many levels. The issues matter, but we have to be able to work together to get things done. That's one thing people expect of us. And sometimes we don't do that so well. So if this is something that helps to bridge a gap, I love that.
I just attended a show that my friend Pat Hazel had put on in Austin. It was called The Wonder Bread Years, in which it was one of these things that harkens back to when he was a child and different television commercials and things that we all can kind of relate to. And he was showing some video. And then also as he was talking about, remember Kool-Aid, you know, busting through the wall or, you know, different kinds of commercials like that. The bottom line of being, we have more in common than we have differences.
Yes.
And why can't we get back to recognizing each other as having this common brotherly and sisterly bond of loving each other rather than pulling each other apart. Let's kind of think about our commonalities rather than our differences.
Yeah, we're in an ugly period of politics. I've been doing this for 30 years, and you know the division part of what's going on right now has not been, I don't remember, as pronounced as it is, and that's a shame because
that's a whole different conversation
right there. Yeah, and if you take down institutions and all that stuff. So again, I think for most people, and we saw it even how people voted, they're just trying to get by. And if, you know, if you can bring them a little enjoyment, mm-hmm. and if you can explain a little bit about their government in a way that's enjoyable, maybe they're going to get a little more out of it. But I've had so many people tell me about, you know, their kids watch the Magic Mondays or that they enjoy it. And so it's been a nice little extra something to do.
Have you gone to schools, like to elementary schools or something from time to time, I guess, and taught some of these things and actually done Magic Live?
So
and
usually I'll go to speak more at high schools because you're talking about government, so it's the higher classes. But I've many times done magic tricks at schools. I've done it for
not just for the trick's sake, but to actually make a point of something, or
usually
or
I'll do it a little, sometimes a little bit about Washington, sometimes it's for the trick's sake because you just want to do something to capture
get your attention, sure.
And they may not think you're as boring to start.
That's a good point. Right? Like, oh boy, politician,
exactly. So, but if the politician also, you know, can, you know, make one card be overturned in a deck that you just thought of, suddenly it's a lot more interesting. So.
Wow, fascinating, and quite a career. And then finally, I guess, as far as long-term, I know there are no term limits. It's just a matter of whether you can get reelected. Do you have like a, not in light of what divisiveness we have right now necessarily, but is there like an exit strategy or anything? I mean, I know you love what you're doing. You say you work from 8:30 to 9:30, and obviously it sounds like not just a passion to do that, but also magic. Have you thought about like, okay, well, at some points, like I think I'm going to spend more time like vacationing, like retire to go wherever I want and whenever I want and do more of these kinds of things and come to magic conventions like this?
Yeah, I make time for Magi Fest. Sometimes I have to miss the first day with our calendar.
Yeah.
And then August, fortunately, I can get to Magic Live. That's why this one was a total bonus. First time I've been to Trix, and I'm loving it. Mm-hmm. But the schedule's tough. You know, like I don't even get my next year's calendar until about Thanksgiving. So I mm-hmm. could never plan a Blackpool or so many other things I'd like to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been building up the library for someday to be retired. I have this idea of what I'd like to do with a more like a corporate show, especially towards the Washington mm-hmm. crowd.
Yeah.
Someday.
Yeah.
But, you know, right now, one of the things is seniority really matters in Congress, and you got to be around a little bit in order to actually have that extra lever of being a subcommittee chair or something to get something done. And I'm actually close to that on appropriations. Two of my subcommittees, the only people ahead of me are in their 80s. So I just turned 60. So maybe, you know, eating a salad every now and then is a good idea. Right. And then, you know, if I could just do that for a little bit, I'm not there as a lifer because I really do have this other mm-hmm. passion I'd love to also spend more time on. But, the fact that I can do the same two things, I recently got recognized by my high school as an alumni. And what I said to folks, and it really, you know, meant a lot, was my two passions back then. I had a van that had magic painted on the side, a mm-hmm. big Jack of Hearts pulling a rabbit out of a hat. It was the old Ed Harris artwork and painted on the side. You know, those were my passions. And I was the senior class president. And now today I'm elected official who's doing magic. And the fact that I've been fortunate enough through my life, in addition to running a specialty printing business, I'm doing the things that I love. And a lot of people can't say that. So I'm going to have no regrets, which is great when this is all done. And I've had some other interesting stories along the way. I mean, do I have time for one quick?
Absolutely.
So this is something that happened when I was between local government and state government. I always had I love traveling, especially unique places. Mm-hmm. And I went to a convention one time for my business, and a guy who was a little burnt out. So he and his friends took a sabbatical for 6 months, and he drove the Pan American Highway in a Jeep.
Wow.
So from Prudhoe Bay, Alaska to Tierra del Fuego, Chile.
Quite
and
a trip.
It was fascinating, and I loved it. And I'm like, someday I want to do that. Hmm. Well, I got this life that doesn't give me a lot of spare time.
No.
So there's one part of it where the Pan American Highway isn't connected, and it's in the Darien Gap. And the highway's never been completed. 10 months of the year, it's kind of swampy. There's a lot of poisonous snakes, extremely biodiverse, but it's never been finished. So people put their Jeep on a boat, take it around that little gap, and then start up again. I found a group that did it. Trip three times a year, because that's the only time you could do it over a couple month period when it's dry enough, that did backpacking through that. So I decided I'm going to be a purist. I'm going to backpack that part, and then someday I'll do the rest of the trip. Well, long story short, you know, this is an area in Colombia where paramilitaries and guerrillas and violence and drug dealers are very intense.
In addition to poisonous snakes.
Yeah, in addition to...
Wow.
So
I'm going to go backpacking through there.
I know.
You didn't tell your wife that, I guess.
No, husband, actually. But no, I did not. No, so,
wow.
And I wasn't married at the time either, fortunately, because okay. I don't think I could have done that now. But I was young and stupid enough
that
I thought this is a great idea. So long story short, we get to the Los Gatillos National Park in Colombia to start the trip. We wake up in the morning to machine gun fire and hand grenades.
Oh, my God.
And we had guerrillas on land, militaries on the river, and we were in between. And we were the only visitors at this national park, which I now understand why we were the only people staying in the cabins they had.
Yep.
Long story short, they came out, said, you know, get under your bunk beds and stuff. The firefight went on for about an hour and 15 minutes. We then were kind of held by the guerrillas who had land, but it wasn't like held by gunpoint. They had two women who, yes, had, you know,
weapons,
guns and hand grenades and stuff. But we were more like they were moving their encampment through at the time. But what was so interesting and why I'm telling the story is, you know, we had two of us that wound up being befriending them a little bit enough that we were fine. And they gave us some of their steer and all the rest. I was doing magic tricks for them. And we had one woman giving them haircuts. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was what we were doing. But it was just so funny. They would keep bringing people by and I'd keep doing the same. I had a language barrier. I didn't speak Spanish. But as you know, that doesn't matter with magic.
With the magic,
a lot of stuff you can do.
Sure.
And it was just a really interesting experience doing magic for gorillas while you're kind of
under
detained.
Fire. Yeah, sage. Yeah. Under siege.
Yeah. The final night, a helicopter circled after about 4 days and they knew that they had to leave because someone was probably going to come to get us at that point. And then that night they actually, we all stayed, in the one area. We had all the families who had their, who worked there because it wasn't that many. Half of them had left on the only boats that were there. The other half stayed with us and we kind of stayed awake because the paramilitaries came back through that night. We just kind of pretended we were asleep, but we all were in one big area. But the one, that one room, we had put mattresses on the wall in case there were any future firefights and all this. But, you know, we came out of that and as a group decided to still do the trek, just a little bit different way through the Darien Gap. But, and then there also, we went to a village that hadn't seen people in a year. And this is a really, like I said, it was a very remote area. Right now, a lot of people are coming to cross the border through that area because of they come into Venezuela a little easier and all that. But at that time it was, they hadn't seen us. So I got to this village. They couldn't find the key for the lock to the hut that they had visitors. They hadn't had anyone there for a year. So they kind of broke it open. A rat comes out. That's where we were going to stay. But I was doing magic there. And this is something I've never experienced because a lot of sister cities I've been to, I do magic and the kids love it. They'll follow you around.
Sure.
Here I did it. And I looked at their faces, and I don't think they understood what a magic trick was, just like to fool you.
It was like witchcraft to them.
Right. So then I kind of had to show them because I didn't want to have any problems. We were not kind of in their turf, but it was such a remote village. You know, there was obviously no electricity. You'd take a picture with your camera, back then a camera.
Yeah.
And you'd see like people four deep just kind of looking at you. They would touch the hair on my arms because they didn't have hair on their arms. Like this was a very remote village there. But that was a different experience also with magic to have it where people really didn't necessarily understand that aspect. So that was a trip that is probably the most memorable trip I'll ever have. But, you know, not many people get to say they did magic for gorillas and I did.
That is a great story.
Yeah.
And that's a great way to end this, by the way, then, too. I do want to say one last thing, and that is, of course, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, as you know.
Yeah.
So what would be your magic word? What's your philosophy?
Can I say a couple of words?
Of course.
Yeah. Nothing beats fun. I'll never forget that from as a kid. It's been much of a driving factor for me.
Was that Adams? A magic, it seems you like you had that little devil face.
I'm trying to remember if that was the old Joker's Wild. It was one of the first shops that I went to, you know, when I was a kid, that they had like in a neighboring city. But I just, or it might have even been the Houdini Club's motto back then. You know, it could have been that.
Yeah.
But I always thought, and I think about it, and, you know, part of why I'm in politics, or the main reason I'm in politics, I want to help people. And I just think too many people, as I mentioned, have a tough time sometimes just, and they're just trying to get by.
Yeah.
And the more we do what we do, it's great. So nothing, nothing beats fun.
I love it. Yeah. Mark, thanks very much.
Sure. Thank
you,
Scott.
You're the best. I'm so glad we got a chance to sit down. This was just, I can't believe time just went so quickly.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott. It was great.
So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Mark Pocan.
Scotty out.
Thank you again, Mark, for being my guest this week.
And I'm so impressed with so many different things that you did, but also the fact right there towards the end when you were saying the thing that motivates you to, that got you into politics and keeps you in politics is trying to help other people and to kind of help them with situations that they can't, where they can't necessarily help themselves. And to a degree, that's what magic does then as well, and trying to help give joy to some people who really need it. And during the recent fires that we've seen in Los Angeles area, well, golly, and prior to that, the hurricane in North Carolina, natural disasters everywhere. The world is really kind of in need of some joy and laughter. And well, there's an opportunity, perhaps each of you who are listening to this might find some way of putting a smile on someone's face by just sharing a little bit of magic then too. Well, I hope that you've enjoyed this week's episode, and also that you tune in from week to week, and that you also subscribe to our pod letter. That is just something that you could get each week if you just go to the magicwordpodcast.com website. You can then see this little pop-up that'll say join our pod letter, and by subscribing to that each week, we will just keep you up to date as to what's going to be going on. I will tell you, by the way, a little snapshot and preview of next week. I will be providing daily reports from the Magi Fest as we kick off the, officially kick off the convention season, because the Magi Fest seems to be the first one in the U.S. That's certainly the largest one to get us going. Prior to that, I think the session has been going on in the U.K., which also is coordinated by Josh and Andy. And so when they get back, then they just, I guess, are in the convention mode, and they just keep on going. So anyhow, next week we'll be presenting and giving you some background information on what's happening from day to day. So if you can't attend the convention, please come back and join us. So this way, this is the next best thing to being there, of hearing some of the conversations and people talking about what the convention's like. And if you have an opportunity, as we're starting into this new year, if you can help us by giving us some of your financial support, we would graciously and greatly appreciate that, because we are in need of some of your support. We have many people who have unfortunately had to bail out this year, but we also have several who have kept their pledges going. And we thank each of our friends of the Magic Word over the years who have donated one time or through an ongoing basis, or particularly those who have continuing to give during with a monthly pledge. And I appreciate that a lot. It helps to defray so many of our expenses we have. I mean, just like, again, going next week to Columbus, Ohio for the Magic Convention there. Well, anyhow, we, again, had a little bit longer episode here. Apologize for that, but I hope that you've enjoyed everything, and we hope to see you then next week. And until then, stay well, get booked, and remember that nothing beats fun. This is Scotty out.